How Tom Brady and the Patriots got creative in outlasting Aaron Rodgers on Sunday night, where the Saints and that Rams defense sit after their heavyweight matchup. More love for that Panthers offense, and should John Harbaugh be in trouble in Baltimore? We've got all that and much more from Week 9 on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. It was a Week 9 Sunday with two just monster games this week. Just mind-blowing matchups. And Saints-Rams definitely lived up to the hype. Sunday night game, I think for, let's say, 54 minutes lived up to the hype.
Which I would take. I'll take 54 minutes of living up to the hype. The other thing, I absolutely love these Week 9 games because they almost always come on the daylight savings time day and you gain an hour of sleep, and that just does something for me. I'd give 10% of my salary if we could have daylight savings timing every single Saturday
every
night into
week.
Sunday.
Just
an extra hour on the week. It's huge. It's unbelievably huge. So I had a great day today. I loved the games today.
Can I tell you what I did? Because I'm simultaneously a terrible son and a wonderful son. It was my mom's 70th birthday, and I told her I couldn't make her birthday brunch because I had too much football stuff to do on Sunday. And then I realized because of the fall back, I would have an hour I could carve out for my mom.
And so did you carve it out? Did you do
it? I did. I saw my mom on her birthday thanks to daylight savings.
That's fine. I don't think that makes you terrible. I think it makes you a good son. I would have taken the extra hour to get ahead on the football day.
Yeah, I really had exhausted everything I had to do. I was just sitting around waiting for the games. And I was like, well, guess I'll see mom on her birthday.
That's a wrap with that.
Let's get to the games. I hope this isn't the first time my mom ever listens to this podcast. Let's get to the games. Let's start with the Sunday nighter here. The Packers at Patriots, the big Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers part two, if you want to call it that, going back to the 2014 matchup. But this was I want to start with Mike Pettine because I thought the Packers had a really, really good overall game plan in this one. They went coverage heavy early. They mixed in blitzes in the second half. They adjusted nicely once Cordarrelle Patterson started gouging them a little bit, but they kind of ran out of bodies, and they also just the Patriots have too many things they can do to you. I feel like.
Yeah, no, they did what we thought. I think we talked. I think I either wrote it Friday or we talked about it Thursday on the podcast. Is the Pettine formula would be to put a lot of defensive backs on the field and present a lot of different looks with those defensive backs, and then cram the middle of your D line with Kenny Clark, Mike Daniels, and Dean Lowry, three really good run defenders individually. They don't always play great as a unit, but they're pretty good. They're very good individually. And lean on those guys to handle the run game so that you can play light in other areas. And for the most part, that's what he did throughout the game. New England adjusted well, and there was a fluidity to how they adjusted. Tom Brady was in command. I thought Cordarrelle Patterson looked a lot better at running back tonight than he did last week. And so it was they had a nice plan in Green Bay, but they fell up against a better team.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, when I think back on this game, the big moment is obviously the Aaron Jones fumble. I guess next week will be due for a crippling Jamal Williams fumble in a Packers game here. But the Patriots are really struggling. Brady had that streak of incompletions that was just it was wild. It was unusual to see, and they pulled out that Edelman throwbacks. I mean, I've never seen a play like that. It was a screen pass. It was a lateral to Edelman, which normally, if you're going to throw off that, you're going to throw it downfield, and they set up a screen with that, which was pretty awesome.
It was great. And what the Philip Dorsett, I believe it was him, he ran a deep over route, which did two things. One, it did give him the downfield option. That's where Edelman looked first. But he's doing that mainly because they're assuming the free safety is going to pick up that over route. But that draws the coverage in the defense that way. So Edelman looks there. Basically, the wide receiver looked off the safety like a quarterback would and then threw the screen. It was a really well-designed play. They had the end arounds to Edelman. That also helped. They always do a nice job getting James White the ball in the passing game. And then the other thing we've seen now every week, and we've seen it, we say it every week, we saw it a little bit more this week than last week, are just the talent throws to Josh Gordon. Just throw the ball in his vicinity and let him win.
Yeah, I mean, he almost had that other one on the sideline in the first half. He's becoming a major weapon here. Obviously, you know, Patriots going without Gronkowski in this one, and you know, the run game is well, as we said, Cordarrelle Patterson stepped up, but you're a little bit, you know, you're down a man in Sonny Michel. They're a better, you know, out of those two back sets if Sonny Michel is back there, typically. They also...
Let me ask you something real quick on the Patterson thing. Well, two real quick things. One, the people on Twitter who have pointed out to me that he wears 84 and was playing running back, I've got my eye on it, but he has not been designated as a running back, and the whole team has not agreed, yeah, that's what he is, and have said so publicly yet. So I'm fine with it, but yes, thank you for pointing it out. The other thing is if Cordarrelle Patterson, who's never been a refined player at any position where he's been, he's just a talent out there, if he can step in and within a week and a half basically become a quality back, he had 11 carries for 61 yards in the game tonight. Do we need to reevaluate the whole – I mean, has there ever been more of a testament to the idea that running backs are just plug-and-play, interchangeable guys than Patterson doing this? It's not like he's getting flashy, weird, designed runs. These are I-formation runs behind a fullback that a wide receiver who's not refined is all of a sudden doing very well. Maybe the running back interchangeable argument has some water.
I mean, it does to an extent. I will say, in Patterson's case, I mean, this was his skill set. I mean, this was his exact skill set coming out of Tennessee. He was a guy who everyone looked at and said, well, really unrefined as a receiver, but if you just get the ball in his hands, he can do things. And he just...
But that implies space, though, doesn't it? And misdirection, end around screens. These are handoffs between the tackles where he's reading front side to back side and reading his blocks and setting up his blocks. These are traditional running back plays.
You might be on to something, but I think if someone looked at Cordarrelle Patterson 8 years ago or whenever he was like a sophomore in college or something like that and said, you know, we think this guy's a running back, I think it would have been an easy transition for him. I think he was sort
maybe
of
that's
built
what someone
more
should have
this.
Done. Someone probably should have done that. The Raiders had a shot at him. The Vikings had a shot at him.
I think when you see a 6 in their defense, when you see a 6'2", 6'3" guy with that kind of speed, I get, you know, wanting to put him outside and thinking he kind of fits there a little bit better. I don't know, but you might be on to something a little bit. I think Patterson's I just think he's a unique guy. I think it's a unique skill set. Yeah, that's my answer to you, Andy. What do you think of the Jermaine Whitehead ejection?
Well, I don't think it was a big factor in the game. The way that I understand why it was shown again and again on TV and talked about, because it's kind of sensational. But this, it did not swing the game, or it did not deplete the secondary. All of a sudden, you know, they can live without Jermaine Whitehead. He should not have been tossed for that. But these guys that hit other men who are wearing helmets, there's a certain level of stupidity that goes into that I don't mind them getting overly punished for. So either his hand gets broken, or fortunately for him, it's that he gets thrown out of the game. It's the lesser of two. I don't know. There's no upside to hitting a man who's wearing a helmet. That's what I've never understood.
It's just I get it. It's a natural reaction. It's instinctive. It's built into you.
Yeah, well, grizzled, testosterone-laden men like yourself, Gary. Most of us are civilized and talk things through. I would have had a conversation with David Andrews before I slapped him. The other thing is he slapped him like a girlfriend would slap a guy for saying something sexist. I mean, it was an open-hand slap across the face mask. You wonder if David Andrews just said something mildly inappropriate to him.
Jermaine Whitehead should have flopped. Then he would have drawn a penalty on that. That would have been embarrassing in its own right, but at least it would have, like, you know, ended up a positive thing for his football team. That's
well,
what
learn.
I do.
He's a young player. He'll learn that.
I'm not constantly punching people in the face. I am constantly flopping and feigning injury and that sort of thing throughout life, just around the office, stuff like that. But yeah, this ended up being, you know, another neat play that delayed flea flicker that the Patriots ran. They rolled out some good stuff. I thought it was another encouraging week for the Packers defense, in another loss.
They're now 3-4-1. The problem is you can't keep having these positive learning experiences in losing situations. Their schedule is somewhat imposing moving forward, which everybody's schedule, the NFL. So, you know, it's these losses are going to start. They're counting now. They need to start winning games as they get better on defense.
I think they have 7 winnable games, very winnable games, I should say. 7 games in which they will be favored to win those games. Coming
well,
up in the second half.
They better do it.
I think they're going to go 7-8. They're going to the playoffs, and I think they're going to make some noise in January. But we'll find out, I guess. Let's go to the other marquee game here in Week 9. That was Rams at Saints, and we kind of said on the show there can't not be a lot of points in this one. These offenses are just too good, especially on the Rams side. You have some flawed defenses, but. The Saints are obviously now the front runner for the number one seed in the NFC, and I don't know. I have a tough time basically convincing myself that the Rams are going to be able to go in there in January and maybe win a game in New Orleans.
Well, do you think it'll be a better Rams defense by January? Let's start there. Because if it was a 10% better defense today, they probably would have won this game today.
Well, let's start with that. Because obviously the issues are on the back end. The issues are especially with Marcus Peters on the back end.
Yep.
What do you do? What do you do at this point?
Well, this is exactly what we worried about, is if the pass rush is inconsistent, and it was again today. Now, some of that is Drew Brees, and his pocket movement is unbelievable. It's brilliant. So the passer, Aaron Donald, got home all game, and nobody noticed, it's not going to show up on paper because Drew Brees just kept eluding him. But if the pass rush is not, let's say it's not, because you're not going to face Drew Brees every week. There's only 2 or 3 guys in the league that good. So the other games where the pass rush has struggled, if they don't get home, Peter's style of play is not equipped to hold up. He is an early in the down cornerback. He is at his best when he plays in off coverage and reads the receiver through the QB, reads into the backfield. That's really not what they have him do, though, in Los Angeles. There's a lot more man-to-man stuff, and because of the pass rush, he's asked to cover longer, and he's not responding very well. He's not, by his standard, he's not having a very good season.
I'm not sure if he's having a very good season by anyone's standard at this point. It's
really
not going well.
Well, you got to consider, he is traveling with number one receivers now, which he hadn't done at any point in his career. He started that, I think it was last week was the first time he's done it. So he had Devontae Adams last week, Michael Thomas this week. But, yeah, those guys, especially Thomas today, they've eaten his lunch too. So it's one I always give a guy credit for traveling with a number one, because that has such a huge domino effect for everybody else. In this case, Troy Hill, he's eager to hide. And he's a fringe backup who's only in because they have so many injuries at cornerback. So give him some credit for that. But, yeah, he's getting destroyed right now. He's losing those matchups.
At some point, they'll presumably have Aqib Talib back in the lineup. Obviously, Dante Fowler was their trade deadline acquisition, and he will have some sort of increased role as the year goes on. I don't know. If you're Wade Phillips, you just sort of bide your time here and say, well, we're going to outscore most teams anyway. So this really isn't a reason to be hitting the panic button, and we'll play our style and we'll get better playing our style? Or do you rethink this thing, kind of like we've seen the Chiefs do, and say, we're going to start sitting back a little bit. We're going to take the aggressiveness out of this, out of the back end here, and just really play it safe.
I think you do, if forced between those options, just something closer to the second option. I think you have to understand what Peters is, and Tlaib is this way as well. These are off-coverage corners, so you need to be willing to play off-coverage, and Peters did that in Kansas City so well, they would match up inside, and Peters was technically an outside matchup corner, but because they kept extra bodies inside, he usually had help to play to. You've got to find a way to give those guys help to play to, and Wade Phillips will. That's why they went out and traded for Dante Fowler. It's why they signed Ndamukong Suh, who, by the way, did play defensive end again today. Fowler played right defensive end. Suh played left defensive end. So we wondered about that on the Thursday show, what would happen with Suh. That's going to be their role moving forward. It's just not a great pass rush overall. It's got one really great player inside, and then it's good, not great in a lot of other areas, and that's going to be hard to overcome. That's hard for any team to overcome unless you're willing to blitz, and that's just not their formula this year.
They also, the difference between last week and this week for the Rams end up being the special teams. We'll call it the special teams play. A couple of one bad break with a spot on the Johnny Hecker fake field goal run, and then they missed a kick. They missed a 51-yard kick. So, you know, those are the plays that sort of went their way with special teams basically most weeks over the last 2 years.
And the game, and in a game like this, it swings the flow of the game, too. It put them down and from behind. Now, they came back, though, so it's not like the special teams is why they lost. They lost the game because their defense got beat, and especially Peters. But, yeah, you're right. The special teams was a factor. Jared Goff was excellent throughout the game. He did have a negative series late when they needed him to step up. I don't think it's anything to worry about, though, moving forward. I'm not worried about the Rams' offense. Is there anything else we need to say about this Saints off? You know what gets overlooked with Alvin Kamara, and it got they featured him again early in the game. We saw less of Taysom Hill in this game, and Alvin Kamara, I think, not coincidentally, had more designer plays for him in the first half especially. He is so good with his contact balance. I don't think anyone in the league is better at staying on balance after they've been contacted, which is why he breaks so many tackles. He is a finesse runner who breaks tackles. How many guys in the league have ever been that?
Yeah, it's just, you know, he's a little, he's like a little Super Bowl or something. He's not violent. His running style, he has those short, choppy steps, and it just makes it look like he's going to go down easily on contact, and he just sort of does not go down.
Yeah.
How about my guy Gerald Everett making some plays? That was the other thing I wanted to talk about. That's my guy. That was my preseason guy, and you told me, he won't be a big deal.
Did I? I'm surprised because I know McVay loved having Jordan Reed in Washington, and Gerald Everett's not Jordan Reed, but stylistically that's the closest they had to Jordan Reed. And what McVay likes to do is that Adam Gase formation, 3-by-1 sets, 3 receivers to the one side, the tight end by himself on the other. And Everett did have a big catch out of that formation in this game. But, I don't think he's a guy. He's not the guy for anybody.
He's not. That's too bad. Give it another couple years. That was a good one. It was a fun one. You had some big swings going back and forth, and the Saints are now in control of the NFC. Let's go to another high-powered NFC South offense. Andy, this is like your favorite team in the NFL right now. That's the Carolina Panthers. Score the 42-28 win over the Bucks. Tell me everything you like about this Panthers offense. Well, I guess we'll go with that.
First of all, have you read my article that I sent in to be edited to you?
I have.
Okay, and are you okay with me having kind of the motif of I'm falling in love with the offense? Or is that too weird and am I going to get a bunch of red marks back after the show?
No. It's weird, but it's good weird.
It's good weird. This offense is so well designed. The more I see it, the more impressed I am with Norv Turner. They have continued to do everything you want in the running game with Cam Newton, and they're leveraging Cam Newton's mobility and forcing defenses to defend him. And because of that, they get a numbers favorable count. They're adding in misdirection now, so they're changing the gap assignments of defenders, just like the Rams do with all the jet action. It's a real hassle to deal with. Carolina's incorporating it as well. And it's interesting, Gary, I was down and saw the Rams the other day, and I asked some of their coaches about that jet action, and they said, yeah, a lot of teams copy it, but they don't know how to copy it. They don't know the nuances of it, because the whole reason you do jet action is to force the second level defenders, the linebackers, they have to change their gap assignments on the fly in response to the jet action. And a lot, so now that you know they're changing it, you build your running plays to exploit those changes. And the problem is not every team knows how to build the running plays to exploit the changes. Carolina's one team that would, though, because of the way their running game has been set up for so many years and the Cam Newton factor, they're used to manipulating defenses through their scheme. So they've continued to do a great job with that. And then when they do throw the ball, which is often off of this misdirection stuff, the high lows and the different route combinations that beat zone coverage, they're a hard team to deal with. They kill you when you're in zone coverage. So the alternative is let's play man to man. But what do we do about Cam Newton as a mobile threat? Do we put a man on him or not? And these are the hard questions they make you answer.
Gosh, yeah, I mean, they had 30-plus yard runs from McCaffrey, from Curtis Samuel, from DJ Moore. I mean, they are delivering big plays in the run game here like no other team. The mistake they made was they did, Ryan Fitzpatrick basically had them right where he wanted them, which is down 4 touchdowns in the first half, and he almost brought him back again, but...
He does that, doesn't he? That's the weirdest thing that he does. He is a better quarterback playing from behind than he is playing in any other situation.
Yeah, it was another wild one. I thought the Bucs might do it again. Well, I figured they'd tie it and then lose it again as they are wont to do. But
tell you something else, Gary, why the Panthers, who I think they play the Saints twice in the last couple of weeks, the last 3 weeks of the season, if I'm not mistaken. It's something like that. They backloaded these games. Their secondary has two guys who are getting better. Eric Reed is one of them, and then James Bradbury, who traveled with Mike Evans in this game and not only beat Evans, but I would say borderline dominated him. Bradbury is a very good jammer at the line of scrimmage, and then he's always been very good at the top of your route. So when he's on, this is a whole different looking defense. Right now he's on. He took Mike Evans out of the game on his own today.
Yeah, they and by the way, the Panthers do finish the season home against the Saints, home against the Falcons, and then at New Orleans the final 3 weeks. So this is going to be a real good holiday season for NFL fans here.
Yeah. What'll be interesting, it's probably going to be for a bye week, so it's the chances of this happening are slim. But if those teams play in the playoffs again like they did last year in the wild card round, they'll have played 3 times in 4 weeks, which I bet has never happened in NFL history. Someone can look that up and email us if they want.
It'd have to be the wild card game.
Which is unlikely. Gonna, yeah. It's unlikely, but yep. This is the kind of stuff that's fun. Come on now.
Yeah, that is that is fun.
Those are going to be, you know what? Those are going to be enormous games because they're going to be for a bye week and home field in the playoffs. Someone's going to be the 1 or 2 seed from those Panther games, Panther Saints games. Someone's going to be the 5 or 6 seed. That's a huge difference. Those are basically playoff games.
Yeah.
I
wouldn't say basically playoff. Playoff games are elimination games, so I don't want to go that far. Those are huge games.
Well, but you get but if you win and get the bye week, you get a free playoff victory.
Yeah.
That's what a bye week is.
Then you lose your edge in that bye week, and someone else comes in who's already had the taste of blood and ends up knocking you off in the divisional round.
Well, that's just cynical bullcrap. I mean, you could say about anybody's bye week now. Now you're not even talking about the scenario anymore. Patriots really hurt themselves tonight, moving closer to that AFC bye week with the win over Green Bay.
They did. You got to grab that 3 seed. That's what everyone should be aiming for.
Oh, jeez.
let's go to the AFC here. Let's go AFC North, where the Steelers are. You know, after all this hand wringing about the Steelers this year, they are in pretty firm control of the AFC North, and in at this point, certainly plenty of football to go. But they go into Baltimore and they get a win. The two Steelers notes I want to give in this one is they were I don't want to call this efficient, but they were very timely with their playmaking. They were on the field for more than 36 minutes. They were 10 for 16 on third down. They were 1 for 1 on fourth down. One huge play in this game was Roethlisberger had scrambled. He got chased down by Za'Darius Smith. Smith came down on him at the end of the run, and it looked like Roethlisberger had done something to his throwing shoulder. So there was also a penalty on the play. It had backed up the Steelers to their own 5-yard line. They were looking at a 2nd and 20. At the time, they were protecting a touchdown lead, and Josh Dobbs came in, and they just let Dobbs throw it. Dobbs ended up throwing a 22-yard completion to convert the first down. Roethlisberger came back. They ended up getting a field goal on the drive, but that was a huge play right there, and that was kind of the theme of the day for the Steelers. They came up with the plays when they had to be made. On the other side of the ball, there were reports this morning, and it's tough to know how much stock to put into this, but that the Ravens would consider making a mid-season coaching move, which to me is it's just absurd.
Yeah, mid-season would be absurd. If they want to examine the John Harbaugh situation, you know, sometimes a coach's era runs its course. There are people, was it Bill Walsh who said a coach should not stay more than, or you should not have the same coach more than 10 years in a row? Some Bill Walshy type of guy. Someone big said that once. I don't know if I believe that, but I would understand evaluating that situation if they want, but that is not a kind of move you make in the middle of the season. That team has, the Ravens have thrived on continuity for too long for that to be the case.
Yeah, to me, just looking at the bigger picture, I think it all comes back to the miscalculation they made with Joe Flacco when they could have had him on a more reasonable deal before they won the Super Bowl. Then they end up having to pay him the monster deal, and Flacco has been up and down. He's been hurt. He is still sort of, I don't know if you'd say still rounding back into his old form, or you just accept that he's not going to be there. But regardless, he just hasn't performed at the level that his contract has demanded at this point, and it's affected their roster building ability on the offensive side of the ball. So
it has. But he wasn't. He's been lately what he was prior to that Super Bowl run, which is why they didn't sign him. So they kicked the can down the road on Flacco because he kind of teased him, but he was never the shining, consistent, illuminated star. Then he has an amazing Super Bowl run, which now you got to pay him. It's a good problem to have, though. It's what every team wants to have. So I don't kick the Ravens for that Joe Flacco. I mean, what were they supposed to do? What would you? You're talking really in hindsight now. Are you saying they should have given him a long term deal before he had the great playoff run when he was a very average, good, no better than good quarterback? He's better than average, but when he was a good, not great quarterback, is that what you're saying?
That's an option if you know your guy well enough. But I'm more saying they're looking at it and saying, boy, you know, this is going wrong. It must be on Harbaugh. It must be on the coaching staff. I think it's on the roster building. And I think they were painted into a corner by having a guy who has, at his highs, been a league average quarterback the last the last 3 or 4 seasons here, and at his lows has been much, much worse than that. So and they are paying him a franchise quarterback contract, and that affects the way, you know, the way we talk about all the time, the rookie quarterbacks and how easy it is to build around them. I mean, this is the opposite of that. If Joe Flacco was on a mid first round pick would get at this point, it wouldn't be a big problem. But When you're paying a guy like that, you need a franchise quarterback type of performance. And so if they're going to pin blame somewhere on their playoff drought dating back to 2014 at this point, that's realistically what it is. And it doesn't have to be anyone's fault. But to say it's on the coaching staff, I think is a bit much.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's a bit much on the coaching staff. I agree. I mean, who are the big-time Ravens, though, that have left in free agency? And we've said, oh, they couldn't afford them because of Flacco. I guess they lost Ryan Jensen at center this year to the Bucs. He got a big deal. But their offensive line's been fine. They signed Tony Jefferson and Eric Weddle in recent years. And their defense, they've still built and kept intact. I think the Ravens are a good team that hasn't – I don't think it's Harbaugh. I don't know if they've found an offensive identity still over the years. And so now when the waters get a little bit rough, they've got more of an identity this year, but it's not a long establishing. It's not something they've been doing for a long time. It's not comfortable yet, whatever their identity is. I think it's multi-tight ends, ball control offense. So – It's a weird spot. They just feel perennially like a 9-7 team, don't they? And the more we're talking through them,
they do. And I do think that comes back to the roster.
Okay.
I think that's ultimately the problem.
It's a 9-7 roster, you're saying?
It is. It really is. Let's go Atlanta at Washington here. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot else to add on the Redskins at this point. I say every week, if they get an early lead, they can play their style and they can win. If they fall behind early, they're in trouble. They fell behind early in this one. They fell behind 14-0 and then 21-7, and they never really clawed back. They got to within 28-14 and that was it. But Falcons got it going. Big day for the run game, which I guess on the Redskins side, you're a little bit disappointed with that because they've been so good up front.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this is the Falcons offense, performing like they thought they would all year, and I guess this is something of a confidence builder for the Atlanta defense as well.
Well, Falcons are 4-4. They're right in this thing now. They've got to 4-4 the ugly way, so we kind of wrote them off early because they got all their losses up front. But if they had gone 4-2 and lost a couple in a row, nobody would be saying they're out of it. So we got to say the Falcons are in it. They're in, and they're only going to be, assuming everyone stays healthy, which you could say that about every single team, they're only going to be better in the second half of the season. As they get guys like Deion Jones will come back, other guys will get more comfortable in their roles on defense. So I'm optimistic for the Falcons. For the Redskins, the run defense thing gets your attention a little bit, because when you put on their film, what occurs to you, because you're trying to figure out, okay, why are they, I'm watching these guys last week against the Giants, why are they 5-2? And it's Mason Foster and Zach Brown at linebacker have been absolutely rock solid. And then that defensive line's been rock solid. They're a very good run defense, which means they're making the game be played on their schedule most weeks. So to see the run defense this week give up 154 yards on the ground, and 148 of that was to running backs, Smith and Coleman on 23 carries, that's a little bit disheartening, and you hope it's a one-time thing. If that becomes a trend, Washington will finish the season 7-9.
Yeah, I mean, look, they haven't had a team really just jump out on them, with the exception of that Monday night game in New Orleans, and be protecting a big leading at them. It seems like everyone's been playing from behind when they played the Redskins this year. So I don't know. I don't know. This might be something of a troubling trend going forward for this team. But Falcons. Speaking on the Falcons real quick. One of their issues going forward, and not to sit here and break down the schedule and all that, but they already had the Panthers and Saints at home at this point. They actually beat the Panthers at home back in week two. So they have a rough schedule coming up in the second half of the season, though. We'll see. We'll see if they dug too deep a hole.
Yeah, and one more note on that Redskins run defense, to just keep it on the football talk, is where they've been at their best, especially those linebackers, are against man-to-man blocking teams, which more teams are doing, by the way. There's a lot more man blocking in the NFL than we've seen before. A lot of gap scheme and traps and pull blockers. That's man-to-man stuff. The Falcons are a classic outside zone running team, and there's a big difference there. So maybe that's part of it, and you look at Washington's schedule and who else do they have that runs outside zone. Dallas is really the only team left on the schedule, and Washington handled their running game pretty well a few weeks ago. So there's reason to think this is a one-time flash in the pan bad day for Washington's run defense. Maybe it just wasn't the right style for them to match up against.
All right, well, we'll see. Let's go Kansas City at Cleveland. Browns, Baker Mayfield said after the game they didn't make wholesale changes to the playbook or the offense. They just sort of simplified some things, threw some things out. And the offense was fine. It's also, they went up against a Chiefs defense that is not exactly a world-beating group. But ultimately, they went up against a Chiefs team that they defensively they just weren't going to slow down. Not to mention they gave up a blocked punt deep in their own territory when they were possibly pulling within striking distance. And I don't know. I think this game pretty much went just about exactly as you think it would have gone.
And they were never going to make the wholesale changes because you can't in the middle of the season. You can't just rewrite your playbook. You can scale it back. And that's why every time that we hear a team makes a drastic improvement and we go, what'd you do? What'd you change? They say, we just got back to basics. We just went simpler. We did what we do. And the only way to get more complex as the season goes along is to have guys stay healthy so you can build the system and grow it, or have Tom Brady and you can grow it that way. You know, guys who are in charge. So I'm impressed that the Browns did as well as they did. Freddie Kitchens, their new offensive coordinator, I don't believe he's ever called plays before. So not a bad showing by them, but not a surprising outcome either. It's Patrick Mahomes. It's getting to where when he shows up along the bottom line, you hardly even pay attention to the numbers anymore, because four touchdowns, one interception, 350 yards looks like nothing now.
Yeah.
For him.
I mean,
nothing for him.
I don't know. It looks like a two-man race for MVP at this point between Mahomes and Breeze. And we'll see what happens in the second half of the year. But Mahomes did throw the one interception in this one, and it was a end of the first half, borderline Hail Mary desperation throw. So
was it the last play of the half? Was it the last play?
I don't think if the Browns came back out, they just had to take a knee. But
it was. No, I'm looking at the play-by-play to confirm. See, that to me should not count as an interception then.
Oh, yes.
It's not a turnover. There's no – the ball is not turned over when that happens. The same thing that would have happened if you'd kneeled the ball happens when the other team intercepts it in the end. There's no swing in the game and no field position, so which is why the QBs are willing to throw that. I hate that those count as turnovers.
So you're saying if it's literally – like let's say the Browns intercepted it and fell out of bounds and there were 2 seconds left and they were on their own 3-yard line and they just came out and took a knee – you would count that as an interception.
I'd count that as a technicality, and then if it happened a bunch, which it wouldn't, but if it did, I'd gripe on this show about how they need to correct the technicality somehow. But plays that happen, like fourth down interceptions, are not turnovers. People always think they are, and they want to count them, and you're an idiot if you don't. How could you not count interceptions as a turnover? But they don't reflect the way the turnover influences the game. They don't change field position. They don't steal you a possible snaps on offense. It's the same. If a lot of times those turnovers are better than incompletions.
All right.
Those quote unquote turnovers.
I feel like I'm probably missing something on this. Some gotcha moment that I'm.
No,
that I'm
what you mean is
on, but,
you think I'm missing something on this, and you just can't figure out what it is to point it out to me.
Yeah, no, I just assume you're missing something. So now I think I'm missing something. One more note from this game. Denzel Ward had a hip injury, so one of the defensive rookie of the year front runners, could miss some time for Cleveland, though obviously this is becoming another lost season for the Browns. One more game here before the lightning round. This is the Chargers go to Seattle, and Chargers are no one pays attention to them because they are probably not going to catch the Chiefs at this point, but they've won five straight now. They go to Seattle and get a road win over a team that had a winning record, which is something that hasn't happened often. This was a 25-17 final. Chargers were in control of this game. They almost figured out a way to give it away, and I think the biggest issue they have at this moment is they have to find themselves a kicker, because Caleb Sturgis was missing quite literally everything today.
Yeah, and the other reason nobody pays attention to the Chargers is because they may have had more fans at this game at CenturyLink Field in Seattle today than they would have if they played this game in their own ballpark down in Southern California. This is the weirdest thing. If this team that has no fan base right now, I mean, there are no Charger fans, they're 6-2. We might be looking at Chargers, quote-unquote, home games in the postseason. Of course, it's going to be hard. They got to get past Kansas City, I guess, to do that. But they're not far behind Kansas City. They're a game back of them. Game and a half if you count the tiebreaker.
Yeah, game back, they never beat the Chiefs. And they still have to go to Kansas City.
Come on.
They
We're
never
smarter
beat
than
the
that.
Chiefs.
We're smart. That doesn't – the past matchups with the Chiefs, with the exception of maybe this year's week two, are almost irrelevant. They've only played the Mahomes-led Chiefs one time.
But they played the Andy Reid Chiefs many times.
Well, I guess.
And
that
staff. I mean,
that whole – this team doesn't beat that. It's just their uniforms anymore. The guys in Charger uniforms don't typically beat the guys in Chiefs uniforms. But the guys in Charger uniforms are different than the guys in the old Charger uniforms.
What do you think the Chiefs win streak against the Chargers is at? Do you remember from week one when I probably gave this stat?
Are you about to trump me on this, aren't you? You've got, I don't know, is it at, here, I'm gonna let you have fun with this. I'm guessing it's at two games, Gary.
That's not fun at all, because that's not a real guess in any way, shape, or form. Nine. They've beaten them nine straight times.
See, well, all right. I think you're winning this one. See, I'm trying to size, pulling my starters on that, guessing two games and letting you run up the score on this little argument.
That becomes a thing, and I know it's anecdotal evidence, but you remember last year they played that Saturday night game in Kansas City, and everyone was kind of like, this is it, this is the year the Chargers finally break through. Chargers were on the winning streak, Alex Smith was having all sorts of issues, and the Chiefs just, they hammered them at Arrowhead, and it seems like that's just the way this series goes at this point. Yeah, Seahawks, as far as they go, I mean, obviously they're not going to catch the Rams in the NFC West. Maybe they can, you know, they're sitting at 4-4. Maybe they can climb back into the wild card hunt here. But this is a team that they'd gotten a lot of takeaways the last couple of weeks. They actually had, this was only the second time this season they've had fewer than two takeaways in a game. They had, they took it from the Lions three times, from the Raiders twice, from the Rams twice, from Dallas three times back in September, but no turnovers in this one, and like I said, they played from behind pretty much throughout this one, and if not for some bad Chargers special teams, this might have been a double digit loss at home for the Seahawks.
Well, a big deal for the Chargers, too. They have found their running game identity, and we wondered if they would under Anthony Lynn, there's another man-to-man blocking coach. It's man-to-man blocking stuff is picking up around the league, and Melvin Gordon's very good running behind man blocking, and we've seen that. He had 113 yards on just 16 rushes in this game today. Both teams ran the ball very well. That's what's going to make things different for the Chargers this time. That's why they might not, and let's assume they at least get decent on the kicking side of things, which I know it's a big assumption based on history, which I guess we've decided really matters with the Chargers. But if let's say they get decent there, their run game identity is going to be what makes them different than past Charger teams, the past teams that always teased us. This one can deliver on the promise if they run the ball this well.
Okay. Fair enough. I'll keep an open mind that they maybe can win a game in Kansas City later on this year. But for now, let's go to the lightning-ish round. Four more games to go from the Week 9 Sunday slate here. Let's start with the Vikings just completely steamrolled the Lions in Minnesota. This was a game that in the first half, the difference was red zone performance. Vikings were getting touchdowns while the Lions were kicking field goals. But, I mean, the Lions were just overwhelmed in the second half. 10 sacks for the Vikings in this one of Matthew Stafford. And this Lions offense just looked completely disjointed. And you got to think that Golden Tate trade. I just don't understand the Golden Tate trade.
Yeah, because he's who you throw the ball to before the defense could possibly ever sack.
Yeah.
If you give up a few sacks, let's get the ball out on the perimeter and in space, that's what they would do. This should not be happening with Detroit. They were not good in their pass blocking against Seattle last week either, and they have too much talent along that offensive line to be playing this way. It's a very good offensive line when you look at the individual pieces. And we've seen that at times in the running game. And by the way, theme of the show, they're another team that's done a lot with man-to-man blocking, and that's their identity. But they didn't have the run game today. It didn't produce 24 carries, 66 yards. Stafford sacked 10 times. He gained 6 yards on 5 rushes, so he's running for his life at other times, it looks like. Bad day and inexcusable given the amount of talent that the Lions have. And I know the Vikings are a great D-line, and maybe we should talk about them on the Thursday show, Gary, because they're looking like the Vikings again that we came to expect. But bad performance by the Lions.
Yeah, they are sack and a half for Everson Griffin in this one, so good to have him back. Stephon Diggs didn't play in this one. Dalvin Cook did come back. He had a 70-yard run and didn't do a whole lot else for the Vikings, who the offense didn't have to do a ton in this one. Houston at Denver. Texans get another win here. Texans have, I'll say, they've quietly won 6 straight. And quietly, I think, is the word, because it hasn't been a terribly impressive 6-game winning streak, though they are sitting at 6-3, which is obviously great shape in that AFC South division. The Broncos, look, we knew the Broncos had issues. They moved Demaryius Thomas. They're obviously, they have an eye, on the future at this point, but, Vance Joseph makes some weird in-game decisions, and that was probably the difference in a 19-17 Texans win here, in which it ends on another team, for some reason, assuming that they're just going to make a 51-yard kick at the end of a game, and they didn't.
Well, they were at Mile High, so let's consider that a 45-yard kick or something like that. But I completely hear what you're saying. And even a 45-yarder or whatever it translates to at Mile High. Yeah, I think teams don't try to get extra field goal yards very often. I think we need to see more of that. They need to be better there. Do you know, I didn't see this game, not the beginning of the game, on television. How was Demaryius Thomas received? His first game was at his old team, which has happened a few times in history, but not very many.
Yeah, they had a at some point, I feel like it was in the third quarter, they did on the some sort of thank you Demaryius type of thing on the Videotron, if I remember correctly. I was sort of half paying attention at that point because Saints Rams was going on, but they
did,
also
did the crowd cheer him when he got his first catch?
I don't think I was paying enough attention.
That's a terrible answer.
I know.
Yeah,
but it was Saints Rams on the other TV. I think I probably was enthralled by that. But he still has his suite there at Mile High, and
well, yeah, because you're not gonna be able to sell that super quickly. I don't know how that works. Would a player sell the suite?
We have, like, no answers on anything on this.
No, we did. We did not prepare for this game one bit. So that's why it's in the lightning round. Next game.
It is. It is. And Vance Joseph, man. That's it. That's got to be better with these special teams decisions and kicking field goals. 62-yarder. He tried a 62-yarder at the end of the first half, which all it did when they missed was just gave the the Texans the ball back in Broncos territory and let them kick their own field goal. And then they lose the game by 2 points. It was just, it was absurd. It was upsetting to me. Chicago at Buffalo here. The Bears roll 41-9. Look, Nathan Peterman, they played it as conservatively as humanly possible with him this week. And he was fine. He executed these short, simple throws. They were not trying anything bold. And I don't know. If you believe in biorhythms or like some sort of weird energy that comes off of people, I mean, Terrell Pryor has a ball bounce off his chest and turn into an interception. They had Zay Jones. Actually, a heads-up play, maybe my favorite defensive play of the day, Kendall Fuller. Or excuse me, Kyle Fuller is the Bears player. Basically jumped on Zay Jones on a pass that was within the 1 yard area outside the line of scrimmage, where there is no defensive pass interference. So Fuller basically blasted Zay Jones. Ball bounces off Zay Jones' hands, turns into a pick six. It was an ugly statistical day for Peterman. Again, ends up with 3 interceptions, though. Two of them were most certainly not his fault. He was even driving. They were down 7-0 early, and Peterman was driving the Bills when Jason Kroom caught a ball and had it ripped away by Eddie Jackson, who then ran it back for a touchdown. So Bills offense has to stop giving up touchdowns is a start.
This is a very thorough recap of a lightning round game where the score was 41-9. I thank you, sir, because I didn't see a lot of this one, and I can't wait to watch it on film because it's going to take me half as long as it normally would, because it looks like I can be done around halftime. There was 28-0.
I'm just we got to start a GoFundMe for Nathan Peterman or something. That guy can't catch a break.
The Bears scored, Reed Foster points this out to me, the Bears scored 41 points and had 190 yards of total offense.
There you go. If you got everything but turnovers and points, this was a good day for the Bills. Final one, a game with no offensive touchdowns. That would be the Brock Osweiler Dolphins get another win. They beat the Jets 13-6. At their place. So they sweep the season series, and it looks like they are going to finish second place in the AFC East if you're following that kind of thing. Dolphins are within shouting distance of a wild card spot if they can sort of catch a couple breaks in the second half of the year. I want to talk about Sam Darnold just real quick, Andy. He's regressing. It was 4 interceptions. He threw a horrid pick six in this one in the fourth quarter that made it an insurmountable 10-point deficit with 11 minutes to go. I don't know. I mean, do you take him out? Do you put McCown in at this point just to sort of say, let's take a breather? I would. I guess that's why
I'm
asking
that's
you.
That'd be a great question to ask a coach, because that's a psychological, emotional question in how a quarterback handles himself and what that means for his place in the locker room and all these variables that guys like you and me who just study the game from the outside, we really can't connect with. I do know this. Darnold's had some issues throwing into underneath coverage this year. The first game against the Dolphins, TJ McDonald got him on a just a very rookie-ish interception. That pick six you talked about was Jerome Baker, another rookie, but a linebacker. Kiko Alonso had an interception. Underneath defenders are getting some of these picks against Darnold, and that's not a good sign.
It is not. Well, that's a wrap for the Sunday action here. That means it is time for our thing of the week. Andy, would you like to go first or would you like to go second?
Nope, I absolutely want you to go first.
Okay, I will make my thing of the week. It's sort of inspired by Nick Mullins and the Thursday Nighter and kind of thinking, it's nice when these guys who sort of toil and whether they develop or not as backups, they know the system, and if the system is good and they execute it well, they can win games. But I really like the fact that the Steelers put Josh Dobbs out there today. They had to put him out there. They were facing an obvious passing situation, and you'd think they would have just pulled back, played a conservative, run the ball with James Conner, and then gotten Dobbs off the field. But they let him basically play it as if he was a real life starting quarterback, and he delivered a big throw, 22 yards. You know, going back to the summer when Roethlisberger got all that criticism for, for being a little bit bristly with Mason Rudolph as far as comments go, that was sort of misconstrued, and Roethlisberger's point was more, Josh Dobbs has been there, and Josh Dobbs has been making progress, and he's someone who the Steelers should have more trust in, was sort of more the takeaway from that, and you kind of saw it today. I thought it was a nice moment for Joshua Dobbs, who overall, really good dude, too.
Gary, do you know Joshua Dobbs?
We did a lot of Joshua Dobbs coverage because he is a...
That's a name drop. Is... You just name-dropped him, which is fine. I name-drop a lot more than you do. I name-drop a lot.
He is... I shouldn't say he's a very bright young man. I'll say that. He's what? He was an aerospace engineer at Tennessee. Was that it?
I don't know. I should have read it, I guess. I didn't read it.
My
thing of the week is running backs in the passing game, and especially on checkdowns. We think about, we need to talk about this at greater length because the Steelers are one team that does it really well, and a lot of people lately have been talking about James Conner and his receiving numbers, and he's got better stats than Le'Veon Bell. It's the way you design your checkdowns for your running backs. James White's a big part of it. Anyone who's ever played with Phillip Rivers, he's been a beneficiary of this. Alvin Kamara, of course, at times, who's much more than just a checkdown receiver. All these guys are, but the most productive running backs in the passing game play in offenses that do a nice job of understanding the checkdowns, not just our "oh crap" button. It's a big part of what we do, and it's a part of our passing game, and it leads to meaningful yards. And it's worth examining further because I think it's becoming a bigger deal with offenses.
All right. That was a good thing. You've talked about that a little in the past. Faster you get it down there, the more of an opportunity you give that back.
I'm trying to think of how I can add a name drop at the end of my thing of the week here on the checkdowns. And I've never met James Conner, but, you know, sometimes Roethlisberger throws, and I did, you know, no big deal, but I did meet Roethlisberger once. He's a nice guy, too. He's a real good guy. No big deal. No big deal at all. We were both good guys, actually. You know, I just acted like myself, and yeah.
For a guy who had that extra hour of sleep, you're awfully grumpy at the end of the show, Andy. All right, that's going to be a wrap for this one. Thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor, who make us sound smart every week. Thank you to producer Shelby Royston and the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good, but most of all, thank you to you for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. You are the best. We'll be back with a deep dive show on Thursday, and we will have the mini mailbag. I know we skipped it last week because we're kind of jerks and we had trade deadline stuff, but we will have this week. So send the questions to talkback@themmqb.com or Twitter, Andy_Benoit or GFrameling_SI. We're both on Facebook as well. Jenny Brent is at Connor or... We'll join the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer on Wednesday. We'll be back Thursday. And then, of course, I'll be on the Friday, the MMQB Gambling Show with Jimmy Traina and Scott Gramling. Listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys Thursday.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.